Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Mad Scientists. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geeksone.com.
Hey!
Hello, my geeklings!
I made a theme song.
I know, and actually this is probably going to be rolling well with me because I'll edit it in so that the theme song's going in the background, so you might not even hear what we just did.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
But I haven't been in this chair.
A cappella group.
I haven't been in this chair in a long time.
Which is funny because that's your editing station. I mean,
I know.
You think you'd be there all the time?
Yes. We've been crazy busy.
Crazy busy.
Actually, this is my fault. I've been out of town for 2 weeks. So.
In Thailand.
Thailand.
Mr. World Traveler.
Thailand, world of sun and smiles.
And then when you came back, you brought back a little piece of Thailand with you.
I brought back a little piece of Thailand with me, and I was trying to get it out of me.
What is the Thai equivalent of Montezuma's revenge?
We were trying to figure that out.
Suryo Thai's revenge?
I'm really not going to get into it. Let's just say it wasn't good.
It's my birthday, but I got all sorts of cool gifts. Aaron got me an awesome little...
I'm going to get you some...
Micro flyer cool helicoptery thing, which I'm going to use to spy on him and his wife in his window.
That means he won't have to be there himself anymore, which
is
great.
Maybe I will.
Because Aaron, they were getting a little creeped out by Matt's face right there all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And there's barely enough room for him and Kalis.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Kalis has got to get a micro flyer.
Doesn't that look like something from that Tom Selleck science fiction
movie? Yes, yeah. What was that
Runaway.
Called?
Runaway. Yeah, I loved Runaway.
Where the bullets could fire around corners.
Yeah. Right.
That's
right. Yeah, really slowly.
Yeah. And they had the big threat in the movie were these little robotic spiders that could inject you with acid but could only crawl along the ground at about 2 miles per hour.
Yeah.
So conveniently, every single person in the movie they try and chase down breaks a heel as they're running away and forgets how to stand up.
An actual precursor of Cloverfield, perhaps.
Perhaps.
What happened in Cloverfield?
Well, Cloverfield was the spiders that injected venom into you but crawled on the ceiling at a much faster rate.
Yeah, I was going to say,
really
those sons
quick.
Of bitches were fast.
Yeah,
it scared the pee out of me.
So I said a precursor.
That is a bit of a leap.
It's a precursor.
Very far.
Star Wars.
Battlestar
Galactica.
Yeah, far back precursor. Yeah.
And this is my other gift.
Mwaha.
iPhone.
Okay.
He kept pulling out at his party every 5 minutes.
So can we discuss some rumors? This may be part of news, and I hope this doesn't mean to frustrate you with a new iPhone.
I know.
Are we segging into news?
It's all right.
So iPhones are now. You can't buy an iPhone online because Apple is all out of iPhones.
Right.
This usually means that. There's a new product coming out.
New model.
June 9th is their developers.
They let me buy it online.
Well, you're probably one of the last.
You got the last one.
I told you.
My parents bought it before me, so I actually couldn't return it.
Right.
Well,
So
you bought it for your parents?
No, my parents bought it for me for my birthday, okay. And they actually sent me the physical iPhone in the mail. So.
Right.
That's pretty
well, this is fine.
Exactly.
The only thing that
it's
the
still
rumors,
effing great.
And June 9th is when all the software is going to come out, and that thing is going to get freaking awesome.
Okay.
All the video games. It's going to turn into a translator. It's going to turn into a video game player. It's going to turn into a chat system. It's going to turn into a Skype phone.
And that's when you're going to get yours, Peter.
And then it transforms into a little robot that runs around and...
Yeah.
Injects acid into you. Which is strange to me, actually, because I know the mobile game market went belly up. I mean, all of these companies that were doing mobile game production went under
the
past 2 years.
I think
so
this is
going to
be
doing it.
Different than mobile gaming. This is almost like DS. I mean, the screen is huge. It's just as big as a PSP. It's got touchscreen technology like DS. I mean, I think this is probably going to kind of bridge the gap.
Yeah, but you can't really port over DS games to it. It's the wrong format. And you can't really use
Brain
PSP games.
On these.
No. I'm not saying it's going to take that. I'm just going to say that it's not a mobile gaming system, like, you know,
but
jammed
it may be
in your...
making some form of transformation towards that.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just curious where it's coming from, because
like
I don't
know
anyone making it.
They
right
demoed
now
a version of Spore on it two right months ago.
Cool.
That would be freaking cool, cool if they actually go through
May
that.
I just mention? Yes. I saw the trailer to Spore for when you're still a single-cell life form.
Slick.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Slick. It looked so good.
Yeah, no, the game is...
I'm still waiting. Yeah. I'm still waiting. I make no judgments until it's in my hot little hands.
You see, you're like...
And I have to upgrade my goddamn PC.
Well, it's going to be out for everything. So, I'm really hoping a 360 version is... A console version is decent.
Yeah, and to segue a little bit back to the iPhone, I was just talking to Aaron about this. I was saying that one of the reasons why I have my PC so tricked out and everything like that, and I haven't bought a Mac, is because...
You're a video game player.
Because I'm a video game player. I'm a hefty video game player. But I haven't played a game on my PC in a year. Over a year.
The PC, like, serious game market has really gone belly up.
Since I dropped really World pathetic of Warcraft, I have not played a serious game on my
PC. But when
PC.
I look at Spore, I think Spore is just born for the PC.
I agree. Totally. But I'm hoping that they... You know, we used to say that about first-person shooters.
I still do.
Well, I know, but you're...
Weird.
You're weird.
I still have high standards.
Oh, please. What was the last first person shooter you played on the PC?
Halo. Oh, on PC?
Yeah.
BioShock.
Oh, you played BioShock on the PC?
Did you play it on the Xbox as well?
I played it on someone else's PC to see what it was like.
Oh.
I liked it so much better.
Did you really?
I really did. The mouse interface is born for FPS.
No, I get it, but people don't say, oh, God, you can't play blah, blah on a console anymore. You can't play first-person shooters on a console. It's pretty much...
Everyone who started playing FPS on the PC does.
No, because I played Duke Nukem and all of those on the PC, and I actually get more...
But you
more...
were never an FPS guy.
No, I've never been like that.
So why is it selling better on consoles, then?
There's a broader audience.
Right. Well, also...
I mean, keep in mind... I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but just to interject real quick.
Oh, it's Peter, you can't...
A PC running a modern FPS shooter needs to be a pretty beefy machine.
That's exactly my point. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But also remember, some of those, you know, some of those games that, you know, that you had to have a supercomputer to run are running full on PlayStation 3s and Xbox 360s.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the one thing that has made me oh so happy about having as many consoles as I do, is there's no dithering, there's no slowdown, which I was constantly getting frustrated over my computer, and then I would have to go and like shut down four systems and be like, okay, why is this? Okay, I guess I need to upgrade my card.
Yeah. It's the PC gamer's bane. I mean, right now, PC games, really, it's the last refuge for strategy gaming now.
But I will say...
So buy Mac now.
That's what I'm saying. If in the next 9 months, you know, to a year, if PC games do not suddenly make a resurgence, then there's no reason. There's no reason to. Because the iPhone, if technology on the Mac can be as functional and awesome and easy as that iPhone, I was like, great. I mean, the fact that I was working on my wife's PC at her work yesterday, and the iPhone was a better, you know, hookup to the internet than the PC was, I was like, okay, this is sad. This is sad.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the PC market's going to get better. In fact,
Haze is coming out, but...
What's the Far Cry people's new game? Crisis that came out, like the super game
that nobody could run,
blew everybody away, did not do well.
Yeah.
And I believe Call of Duty 4 was just flat out stolen so much that the developers said that might be our last PC.
That's been a big problem, is that PC... there are so many savvy people on the PC that the right protection goes out.
Well,
the window,
but that's one of the things.
So
there's a I cannot remember the name of the title. It's a Masters of Orion type game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a strategy game. But basically, they allowed their license to be freely used, because one of the things about PCs that was so cool were the hacks that would come along with it. Somebody would come up with a hack, you could play it, and it would make it a whole new game.
Mm-hmm.
But with all of the protection, the copy protection that's gone into things, and it's basically completely denied you a PC game experience. And it's like, why not just play it on a console then? If it's easier, it's not going to dither, you know, and my character's not going to suddenly go through a wall. But this company basically said, all right, if you buy it from us, we're going to give you a whole bunch of other shit too. So why not?
There is an interesting thing. EA's Battlefield series, which they've got like a gazillion of them now, they have Bad Company coming out for, I think I know all the consoles. I'm not sure about the PC, but all the consoles. But for the PC, they're coming out with a free version of Battlefield that looks kind of like Team Fortress. It's got a kind of like cartoony look to it. Totally free. Download it, run it, you can buy additional things
through there. Oh, it's called Galactic Civilizations.
That's one.
Yeah.
So EA's got this, you know, maybe this business model of giving away the game free.
Why not?
And then if you, the people who really, really like it are going to purchase additional content for it, and we'll see if that works.
There's actually an article in Game Informer this month about Galactic Civilizations and how it's doing so much better than all the other PC models specifically for that reason. There's also, and this brings me to my final show and tell thing, is there all of the guitars in Guitar Hero, and they tell you which is the best guitar in the newest Game Informer.
New Game Informer, yeah.
And mine won, which is the Red Octane Les Paul,
specifically, yes, nice.
My specific guitar. They were like, guitar. If you really want to shred, you got to go to Matt's house.
Yeah, the Guitar Hero 3 won the guitar war. Then the Rock Band is the first party like. One's got the highest rating. But Guitar Hero 3, and then Rock Bands was a second.
But you saw the drum kit, man, with the now it's got cymbals.
Yeah. Well, so the new Guitar Hero 4, that was planning to come out before the end of the year, I guess, has adding all the instruments, including singing. So we've got now, essentially, it's Rock Band.
And you can make your own songs, though.
Yeah. I'd like to see how that works. But here's the problem. The drums look significantly different than Rock Band's.
True.
And I'm sorry, but there can only be one effing
drum kit in my freaking house.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't have room for two drum kits.
Exactly. I mean, somebody's got
to... So what do you think? Do you think Rock Band will license out an ability to snap on maybe some cymbals that work?
It doesn't have to be. It just has to have... You know, like, they essentially have now five pads.
Right.
Three on the bottom and two cymbals, right. Okay? If they allow theirs to work on Rock Bands and you just don't use one cymbal, that's fine by me. Just make it work that way. So okay. You use a three, and then the last one, which is usually the cymbal on Rock Band, the far right one, just have that be the, you know, the top right cymbal. That's fine. That's all I need. That's all you need to do to make me... Rock Band
away. I
thought
there were three pads on a Rock Band. There are four?
There's four.
There are four pads on a Rock Band. Yeah. Okay.
So all you have to do, I will buy it. If it's a cooler experience, I will buy it and get rid of my Rock Band one. But I can't get rid of all my... I've purchased $100-something of downloadable content for Rock Band.
Yeah.
I've got to keep it.
Right.
And it's great. They're great songs. So why would I... So anyway...
You're saying you'll buy the drum kit, but it better work for your old Rock Band games.
If this drum kit can only be used for Guitar Hero 3 because you need, Guitar Hero 4 because it has five pads, okay, fine. But it better downgrade to Rock Band, which uses four pads.
It would work.
Well, six actually total if you count the foot pedals.
Well, yeah, they both have foot pedals.
Right.
I'm just saying they can't do that. Rock Band people are not going to have two effing drum kits in their living room. They can barely get one without their wives screaming at them. You know?
My wife won't let me have
Assuming it's the wife that's doing the screaming.
Well, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, or your husband's.
Right. Yes, them.
Okay. Keep in mind, the Girl Geek is taking over.
They are.
And, they know, they listen to our show.
They do.
We have a lot of female geeks.
Ever since we did the Joss Whedon episode.
Yes.
Like, I think all of a sudden, all the Buffy listeners came on to our show.
Well,
took a listen or two and went, oh my goodness, I'm a geek. I had no idea.
Took all the boys to school on the forums.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, boys. But the girls are bringing up some good points.
We've always had a lot. I think maybe, there was probably more brought to the table after the Joss Whedon one. But we've always had a lot. But they're starting to come out of the woodwork. That's the reason why I do this whole gig.
Yeah.
Because the chicks, man.
Nice.
Chicks.
I'm going to go tell Maureen.
What would you call a geek groupie?
A geekling.
Geekling.
Geek groupie?
We already invented it.
Yeah, but a geek.
Even though one person.
There are different connotations.
One person took offense.
I wouldn't call them groupies.
I wouldn't go that far.
Definitely not.
They are listeners.
I wouldn't mind having a groupie or two.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Somewhere. Hello?
Keep living the dream.
Why don't we do news?
Excellent.
Okay.
Whoop, whoop.
All right. By the way, I am Matt. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, I'm Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Don. I am a video game professional and writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Peter. I am a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
So who's going to start news?
Oh, well, continuing on with our FPS thing, there's a woman who put out an article on the blog on computerworld.com, which is all about getting you help for seasick gamers. So if you get seasick... Yeah. When you're
the arm pads. There are little armbands with magnets set onto them. Mm-hmm. A reader sent this article into us. Thank you so much. The seasickness issue is a huge problem for me playing FPSs. There have only been a few I could play without getting sick. BioShock was one of them, but I would love to get a pair of these. I'm not sure where to
Don't play Half-Life 2. Because I actually started feeling nauseous in Half-Life.
Really?
I love Half-Life 2, but there's an airboat, a lot of airboat levels. And
what is it with you and water?
Well, no. The problem is you can make the airboat go one direction, but you can look, you can turn your head in the other direction. So sometimes that's synced. You're not looking straight forward.
Right.
And there's kind of this vomity feeling kind of for me.
That's fascinating to me.
If I even look at water, I'm sick.
Just
even video game water.
Video game water, can't look at it. I don't get it. But yeah, the arm bands, and I thought you could go buy a set.
Okay. Well, can't you take the Dramamine stuff?
Yeah, just to play a video game.
Is that bad for you? That seems a little bizarre.
Come on. This is like Scott years ago when he found out I was allergic to marijuana.
I thought you said heroin.
Yeah, I was about to say heroin. Allergic to heroin. You can't shoot up anymore. No, but when he found out I was allergic to marijuana, he was like, dude, there are things that you can take.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Why? Yeah, like heroin.
When I take heroin,
my allergies
don't kick in at all.
Is that medicine bad for you?
I'm just not going to medicate myself to play a video game.
The point of playing a video game is to medicate yourself.
You should do it for Portal. It's worth all.
Oh, no,
it's worth
I'm going. I am going to desperately try to play Portal.
I really want to tolerate it for Portal.
My roommate may kill me.
He will not eat anything.
Little puddles of vomit all over the apartment.
I mean, that's a mind bender.
No, and I mean, I get violently sick. I'm talking like okay, I have to go lay down in a dark room now. Kind of sick.
Really?
You know?
Oh, you're doomed.
Yeah.
I know, but I want to play it so badly.
This Portal's
the
great.
End.
My Are you done?
Only friend, the end.
Are you done with the orange box?
You can borrow it because yes. I'm not done with episode 2, but I might as well start my next news item. I just would like to talk about Grand Theft Auto 4.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Okay. How is it?
So none of you have even touched it?
I haven't touched it yet. Okay. I got to go back.
You guys are missing out.
I spoke to my brother who reviewed it, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. So... I'll give a review. That's fine. I mean, I haven't played the whole thing. I'm just, I'm moving through it. There's plenty of reviews online. I'm just going to say this. I bought all the other Grand Theft Autos.
Yeah, I did too. I was turned off after three.
Well, I would just play them until I kind of got bored with the storyline that, like, the motivation to move forward would wane. And then I would just drive all over the city, try to see all the sights, and
hit a lot of people with my car.
Yeah, and try to get the cops to chase you, and then I would put the game down.
Yes.
This game is not like that. This game, the story is so compelling that you kind of don't want to screw. It almost puts you in a role-playing mindset mm-hmm. where you don't want to do that because you feel like your character wouldn't do those type of things and you don't want to screw up your universe. Is that, you know what I mean? Okay. Like,
yeah.
You kind of get in the mindset like, well, why would I do that to this town, city? And the city is so alive feeling that it's pretty freaky. Like, it feels like it's almost a character a way.
I talked to Jack Fletcher, who is a guy I'm going to try and get on the show. He brought me in for this anime that I did. And I found out recently that Jack Fletcher did, Ninja Scroll. So, I mean, he's been doing voiceover and stuff like that. And he basically said, the guy who does Grand Theft Auto, because I asked him, how did he get all of those voices for it? And he said he used two major techniques. One was just going out on the street of New York, and he would ask people to just take a tape recorder and record themselves all day. Mm-hmm. Just on the streets of New York in any conversation they had, and then give it to him back at the end of the day.
Okay.
And the other one was he would give it to kids who were interested in the game and just have them record conversations with their friends, with anything like that. And as soon as he heard an interesting voice, he would basically come in and say, all right, who's that with the really interesting voice? Let's bring him in and record him. And that's how he found so many vast different characters.
Well, there's also that many conversations.
Right.
Like, and they're contextual with the city. Like, if you're at the beach, there's someone taking photographs and there's guys talking about surfing. And
right.
Or if you're at near a construction yard, there are guys doing construction work and they're talking. I mean, it's like every part of the city has this feeling. And if you're in the Russian neighborhood, they're speaking Russian. If you're in a, Chinatown, they're speaking China. I mean, it's not random shit. They're all kind of observe. They feel like they're observing and stuff. It's crazy.
That's fantastic. Oh, by the way, can I make back to the Geek Week just a little bit. I've been learning Chinese lately, mm-hmm. and I talked to my Chinese tutor, and I said, is there a word like in Japanese, like otaku in Chinese for geek? And she thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. Maybe, and because I was trying to look for a derogatory insult for geek. Mm-hmm. And she basically said, you know what? As far as I know, in Chinese, when you're speaking Chinese, she said in Singapore, sometimes you can come up with things. She said in Chinese, there's no word for geek.
We just assume that they're all geeks.
No,
that,
it's basically, she said the cultural reaction is, oh, you're reading books, you're studying science, you're playing games to keep your mind active. Great, good. We love video games. So there's.
I don't buy that either.
I questioned her and questioned her about it, and she could not come up with anything.
So we'll have to find if there's someone else that's more knowledgeable.
Exactly. So if you're out in Geekland and
this is the culture that put limits on MMORPGs and. You know,
because people were dying, not because
government.
It's productivity topic. Dropping was their big concern.
But that's also the
government.
That's not
cultural.
Doing that.
That's not cultural. People going, you know.
Well, but again, the point is, let's get some more information.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Let's find out if it lays out it with other people as well.
Yeah. Mm. I said, is there an instance? She said, the closest I can come up with is four-eyed frog. And I said, well, could I call myself a four-eyed frog? You know, and she said, well, you don't wear glasses. And I said, well, does it have anything to do with, you know, books or watching sci-fi
movies?
It's
like four eyes.
And she said, yeah, it's four eyes. And I was like, oh, okay.
Hmm.
So... If anybody out there knows, let me know.
Well, back to what you were talking about.
Back to what you were saying about GTA.
With Grand Theft Auto. My brother played the game and had a very different reaction.
Mm-hmm.
His complaint was he loved the first three. Mm-hmm. His complaint, he had two complaints. The first one was he said that whenever he had to go do any mission, he had to drive for 15 minutes to get where he was going, is what he said. He said it took him forever to get across the city, whereas in the past games,
a smaller city.
Okay, well, that's what he told me.
Weird. Okay.
He also told me that
maybe he just had to drive correctly and not through buildings.
Well, knowing my brother...
He's a really slow expert.
No, I've seen the way my brother drives in real life, and let me tell you, he doesn't drive slow. Okay. So the second thing is, he said that... in the past, when you got lost or something, you know, you jumped out of your car, you went running around, and you find all these hidden things all over the city. He said, in this city, what he saw was he said it was actually like, you know, just buildings. There was nothing hidden. There weren't Easter eggs.
Well, there are. There used to be stars or something you could
collect. Stars, all sorts of
stuff. This one's got pigeons.
Okay.
Hidden pigeons that are.
So it still has
something. It's just a little more contextual. Instead of like random stars floating in the air, it's a pigeon that has kind of glowing. So at least fits with the whole context of the city.
Pick up a pigeon.
Maybe.
Kind of like rats. You didn't have that type of reaction at all.
No. In fact, the exact opposite. The city is smaller. Mm-hmm. Every inch of it is completely different than the block before it. The problem with the other ones is that you would drive and drive and drive and drive, and you would have this repetition look. It kind of would look the same. Here, I've only unlocked 1/4 of the city. Mm-hmm. And I could be there for 40 or 50 hours and be completely happy. And I haven't gotten to the Manhattan part of it. There's just so much. It's just the density of each place is crazy. And not only that, but now there's all these buildings. Like, there are, bars you can play pool in. And the pool game is like a real, like, it's a pretty good little mini game.
Didn't you say you could watch TV?
They've got whole 15, 20-minute television shows that you can watch on your TV that are hilarious, like the Republican space marines that go around and shoot foreigners that are these aliens, and they're, it's hysterical. The radio stations are really freaking funny.
They always have been, though.
They always have been. It's very cheeky, and even though there's a lot of sophomoric humor in it,
What you love about it.
But
it's always been that.
This game is way more adult feeling. What they're commenting on through the sophomoric humor is very now. Like, they're talking about the war. They're talking about terrorist stuff all the time. They're talking about religion, what you teach in the, they've got a Rush Limbaugh guy who has a whole station to himself.
Why do I suddenly see this in some sort of Planet of the Apes universe going, this is what 21st century America is really like?
Maybe, but it really does a great job of commenting on, or making some points. And it does it in a sophomoric way, but there's this adultness to this game that is way different than, including the storyline. The storyline is very adult and mature. It feels like a grown-up, mature game written by adults with taste.
Well, maybe that's why my brother doesn't like it.
He doesn't listen. He's not a geek.
My other question was, he said that escaping from the cops was way too easy now.
Is true. That is a problem.
Okay.
That's a problem. Being chased by the cops is a nuisance.
Okay.
But that is it in this game.
Well, so far. You've only unlocked a quarter. Maybe it escalates.
I've seen someone just try to go through the city and rack up as many stars as they can. And even if you get like 5 stars, it's almost impossible to get caught.
You basically just go in a straight line really fast and you outrun the cops.
Yeah, that is kind
You don't have to go to a pay and spray anymore.
Zero punctuation said the same thing.
But there's no reason to.
Yeah, that's a problem, I think. I think they overreacted the last time.
Yeah, where was
last time, the problem was that you would get a star by mistake because you would drive or hit somebody. You know what I mean? And then it would snowball into this thing. And then you're like, I'm trying to freaking complete this mission. And you would get, it was like impossible.
It should be something like up to 3 stars. You can get rid of them by going fast, but 4 or 5.
It's like
you've got a helicopter.
Yeah. And I think they wanted to do that. It's not happening. I mean, they've got the helicopters, the SWAT guys come in and all that stuff, but you can just always run.
Yeah.
So that is a problem. But that's not really, in this game, that's not the point. Like, the cops are kind of secondary, at least from what I've gotten so far. Anyway,
Peter, news.
Okay. So, that plastic and such that takes 500 or 1,000 years to decompose?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Big problem, right?
Absolutely.
Well, we found out it only takes 20 years.
Well, you would think that someone would come up with some way to, fix this.
Bioorganism.
Right? Yeah.
Well, finally someone has.
Oh, really?
A Waterloo teenager has found a way to make plastic bags degrade faster. In 3 months, he figures.
Whoa.
He figures? Okay.
Okay.
How does he do this?
Daniel Bird.
Shouldn't be too hard to confirm.
Right. Daniel Bird's project won the top prize in the Canada-wide Science Fair in Ottawa. He came back with a long list of awards. Basically, Daniel, a 16-year-old grade 11 student at Waterloo Collegiate Institute, got the idea because he saw in his everyday life he had all these plastic bags around the house, and it was really annoying to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, almost every week I have to do chores. When I open the closet door, I have an avalanche of plastic bags falling out on top of me. So one day he wanted to know what other people were doing about these bags. When he found out that the answer was not much, he decided, well, look, plastic does eventually degrade.
Mm-hmm.
So he figured that microorganisms must be behind that degrading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
His goal was to isolate the microorganisms that can break down plastic. Not an easy task because they don't exist in high numbers in nature. Okay?
So, this kid is scaring me.
This kid, that's awesome. Did some work, obviously.
So basically what he did is he ground plastic bags into powder, then using ordinary household chemicals like yeast and tap water to create a solution that would encourage microbe growth. To that, he added plastic powder and dirt, and the solution sat in a shaker at 30 degrees.
Okay.
This kid's sharp.
Basically what he was able to do...
30 degrees Celsius, 30 degrees...
It doesn't say.
Okay.
So basically after 3 months of upping the concentration of plastic-eating microbes, he figured out... he filtered out the remaining plastic powder and put his culture into three flasks with strips of plastic cut from grocery bags. As a control, he also added plastic to flasks containing boiled and therefore dead microbes.
Okay.
The gist of it is that when he was done with this... After 3 months, the control strips were the same, but the ones that had been in the live bacteria culture weighed an average of 17% less.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All with bread yeast?
Let me clarify what he did. He put dirt in here that had a lot of different microorganisms.
Yeah. Used yeast to help it grow. Yeah.
Okay. And then what he did is he kept refining which organisms were actually eating the plastic.
It just seems really odd that
nobody ever did this.
He just had to just kind of bring out some...
Well, he probably went to a local dump or something like that.
Well, he kept refining until he had basically down to four microorganisms.
Hmm.
Okay. So then he separated the four different microorganisms and tested them on different plastics.
Sure, yeah.
And basically he found that it was really one of the microorganisms that was actually doing the eating of the plastic.
Sure.
But what was interesting was, I mean, this guy's really smart.
He's a sharp kid.
He found out that with one of the other microorganisms, this organism was a lot better. It was twice as effective.
His buddy with him.
If one of the other four was in there. So he basically was able to increase it.
Dude, this young Iron Man.
He found strains 1 and 2 together produced a 32% weight loss in plastic strips. His theory is that one strain helps the other strain to reproduce.
Is this kid named Tony Stark? Or?
You know, it is.
Speaking of mad scientists.
Exactly. Anyway, I thought this was really amazing.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
The sad part is all I can think of is like the horror movie applications of this. You know, some new microbe that devours plastic and loose in the world.
Yeah.
What's the next evolution?
Well, you guys heard about the ants in Texas that are eating computers?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
There's an ant that eats like
the wire. The plastic around
wires. And the sealant around things. Like, it's going after, like, water pumps and computer.
God.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Nature will find a way.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing is, like, imagine, you know, this getting out of control and... I mean, okay, so let's say
maybe they
can't
always
fly anymore because mm-hmm. you can't guarantee a plane will not follow the sky. Or the banking system collapses because no bank can keep a record because they're always... I mean, imagine like something like an ant bringing this technology, you know...
Maybe it's always been here because human culture has recycled every, you know, whatever, 100,000 years, and we've just bumped ourselves back to the Stone Age.
These are the ants that brought down Atlantis.
Yes.
You're saying it's happened before and will happen again?
Yes.
For those of you Battlestar people.
Oh, it has happened before.
News done.
I only have one story this week. Robert Lynn Asprin, writer of the Myth series, has passed on.
No, he didn't.
Robert Asprin. Didn't he do like
Myth Conception,
Thieves World, the Greyhawk series? This guy. For those of you who aren't familiar with his writing,
he even did the novelization of like Alien and Aliens and all that stuff.
Have.
I think.
He's probably best known though for two series: the Myth series. And the Fool's Company series.
Thieves World was big in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the 80s, but yeah. It fell off the bookshelves
the Myth series is still there.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't familiar with the Myth series, it's targeted towards younger readers. I'd probably say early teenagers, but some older readers find some fun there. It's basically a comedic fantasy series that has been. It was one of the first ones on American shelves that proved that comedic fantasy and comedic novels could actually do well.
I read all of the Myth series. Myth Inc.
Oh, yeah. Another fine myth. Little myth marker. You know?
He must have been running out at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Another fine myth, you know?
God.
Misconception. His most recent book, I think, came out about 2 or 3 years ago, which was supposed to button up the Myth series, which kind of ended unceremoniously way back when. But he was a major contributor beyond the Myth series as the editor of the Thieves World books and the editor of the Greyhawk series. And I think he wrote a few of them, too.
How did he pass?
I don't have that information. Oh. When I got the news story, I think I found it last night. There was no news yet.
It's very mysterious.
Oh, Aaron.
I mean, come on. It had to be done.
Aaron, I never have to give you the look. I'm very disappointed.
It was in honor of him.
But thank you, Robert Asprin, for all of the hours you contributed to my childhood.
We'll miss you.
And Jesus. I'm trying to give a touching farewell here.
We're down two hosts. Two of our hosts are dead.
Dear Lord.
All right, so two things sort of in close conjunction. One is that there's an electronics missing link that's been found. Details of an entirely new kind of electronic device which could make chips smaller and far more efficient. It's referred to as a memristor. Basically, the devices were proposed 40 years ago, but have only recently been fabricated in, and they write about this in the journal Nature. We've already been able to build transistors, but now memristors. And what memristors do is that basically they will remember information after the computer has been turned off. So when you turn the computer back on, all of your pertinent information
is still on there.
Everything is still there.
You're saying so it boots up faster? Or?
It will allow for booting up faster. The guy who proposed it basically said, I'm thrilled because it's almost like a vindication. Something I did is not just in my imagination. It's fundamental. The memristors are so-called because they have the ability to remember the amount of charge that has flowed through them after the power has been switched off. This could allow researchers to build new kinds of computer memory that would not require powering up. Today, most PCs use dynamic random access memory, DRAM, which loses data when the power is turned off. But a computer built with memristors could allow PCs that start up instantly, laptops that retain sessions after the battery dies, or mobile phones that can last for weeks without needing a charge. This could be sick. Now, on the other sort of link story...
That, the name of that, though, sounds like one of your fake news stories.
Yes, it does.
What was the name?
Well, Memristor. Yes. Memory it actually sounds like something from Munchkin, the guy who creates the...
Oh, Follett?
No, the Munchkin games. He always has, like, the Baser, the banana fanfo phaser. Yeah, Steve Jackson games. Anyway, so there's a real-life Iron Man suit that's been invented.
By the Japanese,
By the Japanese.
There have been a lot, though.
Yeah, this always comes up, like...
Well, two things. Halo. One is that this suit is fantastic. It does not fly. It does enhance strength considerably. And... the thing that bugged me out the most is not that, because there are a lot of companies, is that the name of this company that's created it is Cyberdyne Incorporated.
Yeah. What? Are they out of their minds?
But combine that with the combat suit the American guy made a few months ago, and the flying suit.
Yeah, but the combat suit was a dude who strapped on, like, you know, some Velcro, like a flashlight on his head, and it was so stupid looking.
I'm sorry, I thought that combat suit looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm with Peter.
He spent like $300,000, and it was like, and I got this special light sensing.
The Swedish flying wing, that thing looks awesome.
I didn't see that one.
Oh, it can't launch right now. He has to throw himself out of an airplane.
Yeah, okay, gee, I can do that.
But once it's up, it's a rocket jet. It's a rocket pack.
The thing that I think these guys don't watch movies, because Cyberdyne was launched in 2004 of June to commercialize the cybernetic work of a group of researchers headed by Yoshiyuki Sankai, a professor of system and information engineering at Japan's University of Tsukuba. Its newest product, the robot-souped hybrid assistive limb exoskeleton. So it's called the HAL.
Oh, these guys are...
I mean, really?
They're doing it on purpose.
Yeah, they are.
They're doing it on purpose.
This is like a fake...
No, listen. You've been... Listen.
But I'm curious if Cyberdyne was the name in the Japanese version of Terminator.
No, it is brilliant. Think about it. You're going to create a company and you want instant attention?
Yeah.
Name it after something that ends the world in a movie.
Yeah,
everyone's going to notice. It's genius.
So their new Skynet project.
It's like, exactly. It's genius.
I'm just picturing these people walking around in the suit and the little computerized voice going off and they're like, where are we going? Dave. You
know. My name's not Dave. It's
Where are
Matt.
We going? Dong.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Name's... God, what is wrong with this thing?
Daisy. Daisy.
All right. I got another one.
You've been gaining weight, Dave.
Speaking of gaining weight, comfort food for monkeys. They did
bananas.
A study where basically they wanted to find out how monkeys would react to basically the equivalent of donuts. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So fat.
They created sweet banana-flavored pellets. And what they found out was really interesting was basically that monkeys that were high up on the social rank, they would eat a couple banana-flavored pellets during the day and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But monkeys that were low on the rank, that were under maybe a little more stress,
wow,
they would eat this all the time. They would eat it day and at night.
Sounds familiar.
What's interesting about this...
You're kidding me.
Yeah. No, it's true.
You got good ones this week.
Now, what's fascinating about this is that, you know, when we do studies on people, we have all these things we have to take in because the human mind is pretty complex. We got to take in things like, you know, dieters who tasted one forbidden food and then couldn't stop themselves from binging, or people who are rebelling against, you know, mandates of fashion mag, all this stuff. In this case, you don't get all that stuff. It's just, you know... How do they act? And they found out that, you know, it had a lot to do.
Higher up the chain, lower down the chain.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And now this, what's interesting about this is they say one possibility is that the fatty foods help block the monkey's stress responses. Okay. There's another one, though, that says snacks might – another possible explanation, one favored by Yerkes researchers, is that snacks activated the reward pathway in the brain. They may have provided the same sort of dopamine reward as cocaine, which was studied in a previous experiment with monkeys by researchers at Wake Forest University.
By injecting them with cocaine.
In that experiment, the dominant monkeys didn't show much interest in pressing a lever that administered an intravenous dose of cocaine. But the subordinate monkeys, who started off with compromised dopamine receptors, kept pushing the lever to get more cocaine just as the subordinates in this new study.
So power is... getting the high that people without power are not getting the high.
But that's part of it. But the other part of it is that there's not stress. I mean, if you're higher up, you know, and you're socially,
you don't think I'm stressed?
No, I know you're stressed.
Well, I'm sorry. You think you're high up on the food chain?
Well, yeah.
I've seen you hit the donuts.
Yeah. I just roll in them. I don't know what you people are talking about.
But
wow, interesting,
fascinating. Monkey comfort food.
Monkey comfort food.
I was going to bring up Indy 4, but I think maybe I
probably
might
probably wait a bit on that one.
Let me watch it,
and then you can destroy it for me.
So that I'm not destroying all our listeners. I'll give it one more episode.
Maybe we'll do an episode about.
I'm going to throw in
Indy next week.
I'm going to throw in two real quick mini reviews. Then, one, I rented the first few discs of the series Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a huge J. Michael Straczynski fan.
Yep.
And go away. Do not rent these things.
He said it was horrible.
I did not hear anything from him about
it. Who said it was horrible? At Comic-Con.
I don't remember.
Who's the lead in that?
It's
not Skeet Ulrich.
Not Luke Perry.
Luke Perry. Yeah.
He said, and I quote, Luke Perry.
Oh, Pete was with me.
Is to acting. what Auschwitz is to health spas.
Oh my God.
No, and he's being kind.
Yeah.
Though the one thing that I did find amusing in the pilot was the two female leads were Six and D from Battlestar Galactica. And they did not make it into the rest of the series. They were just in the pilot. Hmm. So avoid it. Just I know it's out on DVD right now. I Netflixed it. Don't. Go away. Just leave it.
Wow.
I also rented Day of the Dead, for those of you who are big zombie fans out there like I am, hoping that it might be able to follow up a little bit on the wonderful thing that was Dawn of the Dead for me. Mm-hmm. No. No. Just it's a step up from the standard zombie schlock, but it's still a massive step down from the 28 Days Later, from Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn has killed two films.
All of those things. So
it must be bad.
Day of the Dead is no-show, folks. Do not. It actually stars the girl from, I can never remember her name, the girl from American Beauty, who's the cheerleader who has all the flower petals dropped on her,
yes,
as a an army corporal. And
that seems realistic. I could see that.
You know,
is she a naked army corporal?
So did you like
that too?
She does in fact take down Ving Rhames as a zombie.
Huh?
Very
interesting.
It's one of those things where the script for Day of the Dead was probably the weakest of the three of the major three zombie movies. You can sort of see where they tried to borrow from it. It is supposed to be a remake, but they just failed on every level. As an action movie, it leaves wanting. As a standard actual zombie movie, where you know the human element is so important, they missed that by a country mile. Avoid it.
Wow.
Not worth it.
I have.
I'll probably love it.
I have a link.
Well, save it for the end of the show.
Well, I'll give it now.
Okay.
I have a link, which is basically there's an ebook called The Secret History of Star Wars.
Okay.
I have not read it. I've only read about it. But basically, this guy, the mythology that we've grown up with is that George Lucas, he wrote the first Star Wars, and he had so much stuff that he couldn't fit in it that he actually had all six episodes mapped out in his brain and knew exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Karen and I disbelieve this.
This guy actually also disbelieves this. He basically says, look, you know, there's a reason why maybe the first three episodes, are significantly different. That he thinks that George
Lucas do with his wife
was kind of figuring it out as he went along.
Yeah, that's obvious.
And goes on to explain, like, for example, he thinks that he didn't know that Darth Vader was going to be Luke's father until it came time to make that up.
I totally agree with that too.
So he's really if you're curious, he's basically done a lot of research, and this is his sort of
dissertation on it. George Lucas's
and thing. We'll have a link.
Okay.
And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is it's not often that we can come in here and say that we found something that we think is really great and really special and that you should go out and get and read. This book that I just read, The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. It's his first book, and I think it's fantastic. I found it because Goblins, Goblins, the comic I read online that we linked to, had an ad for it, basically, because he knows him. He did it. He wrote, you know, a little very cute ad that made it sound interesting. So I got it. I read it. I loved it. It's the winner of the Quill Award. I think it's fantastic.
Check it out.
Go out, read it. I'm going to pass it around to the geeks.
The Name of the Wind.
They can see if they like it.
Put
as much
me at
as
the
I
end
did.
Of the list because
Aaron doesn't.
I
read.
Don't read.
You don't read. I know. So
reading's
me first.
Hard.
Clockwise. All right. Final thing, just to end this on a downer. wildlife populations are plummeting. This blew me away. Between a quarter and a third of the world's wildlife has been lost since 1970.
We're eating them.
Yeah. No.
They're tasty with ketchup.
Wildlife. Biodiversity. Basically, populations of land-based species fell by one quarter, marine by 28%, and freshwater by 29%.
Yeah, there's some scary-ass stuff going on right now. I don't know. It didn't really hit mainstream news that much. They shut down salmon fishing this year. That's not done. You know, you don't shut down salmon fishing off the coast of California.
Pretty much. And we know right now that the only place that you can get wild-caught salmon is on the Pacific coast. Anything that says, wild-caught and it's Atlantic is not actually true. Because everything that's Atlantic is grown in a farm, period. Mm-hmm.
There's I don't know if this really actually relates, but I do remember once seeing this thing where basically they were showing all these bears that were literally starving. They looked like dogs. They were so mm-hmm. thin. They looked like mm-hmm. dogs because they didn't have the salmon. It simply disappeared.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know. So yeah, the final thing basically said humans are wiping out about 1% of all other species every year, and one of the great extinction episodes in Earth history is underway.
Yep. Well,
1% every year. So that's my downer.
We're going to be eating Soylent Green here soon because of that shit. Well, so yeah.
PETA has the $1 million offer for somebody who can invent a biogenetic chicken.
Soylent Green.
People are trying to make synth meat. You know, like just grow meat, real meat.
Yeah, clone.
But grow them in chunks.
Which is sort of a fascinating concept because in theory, if you can do that, you can do whatever portion of the animal you want. With the right ratios of environment, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means, conceivably, you know, if they do that, we could replace the livestock industry and have filet mignon, pounds of it, every day for the rest of your life.
But it's kind of gross to think of, like, a big factory growing a big cube of flesh.
I find it less repulsive than a slaughterhouse.
Okay, you're right. You're right. That is less repulsive.
Just saying.
Big cube of flesh, slaughterhouse, Matt's becoming a vegetarian.
There was a George, I believe it was a George R. R. Martin book that he wrote where they literally have these meat plants, these big giant plants that are just meat. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah,
but it sounds like as part of a Xanth novel.
Yeah. No, I think it was
George R. R.
Martin.
It's a big meat plant.
Yeah, and it was pretty gross.
Yeah,
go cut a stem off of the meat plant.
Can we move on to our topic?
I think we can.
Please.
Why would you say that I am mad?
Throw the switches.
He's alive! Alive!
So our topic today is mad scientists.
Somebody was going to do it.
It's alive! Our topic is alive!
So the question is...
He's been waiting for 50 minutes.
A really long time, yeah. I've been sitting on that chuckle and it's burning my butt.
So the question is, Frankenstein, Island of Dr. Moreau, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Reanimator, The Fly, Captain Nemo, The Invisible Man, The Black Hole. Why do we have so much of this? Mm-hmm. And why is it so prevalent, often in what's considered to be the classics of our...
Yeah, that's one of the questions I had. Like, why before 1945 is this like the huge thing, and then we have a fall off in 45?
Okay, can I chop off maybe a big lump of some of these people, and as not involving, not appropriate for this conversation.
See, you could try.
This is the thing that I'm
prepped
feel like,
to disagree with you.
I feel like this is a defining difference. What I didn't concentrate on were bad guys who were just smart and had a good idea.
Moriarty, not a mad scientist.
No.
Though he's a chemist.
Or even like Dr. No. To me, a mad scientist is a scientist who might be evil, but whose technology he hasn't thought it through, and it gets out of control or changes him, or you know what I mean.
So the mad scientist had to be at me at the university.
You can't just be an evil genius,
like Doc Brown. Would Doc Brown from the Back to the Future series be a mad scientist?
He is a mad scientist.
Yeah, because
I'd say he's almost the definition
of one. He's just not an evil mad scientist.
Yeah,
I don't think evil is necessary.
Well, he added the evil.
No. I'm just saying he may or may not. But I'm just saying, like, for example, a smart genius. Like, Lex Luthor, to me, is not a mad scientist.
I totally think Lex Luthor is mad scientist.
Or Val Kilmer in Real Science.
Because to me, a mad scientist, his technology gets away from him. Or no, he doesn't understand the consequences.
I think they're different kinds of crazy.
I think...
Because that's the only thing that makes him mad.
No, that's not... I don't think that's the case. Again, Doc Brown is a good example. He's a character who seems mad, But he's not a. But his
I think his technology gets away from him. He eliminates himself.
No, I think he's
not
like,
in a bad way. I mean, like.
Well, nothing.
I think I'm going to step in here and throw in my two cents.
Okay.
I would say a scientist whose inventions do harm, right? Whether he intends them to do so or not.
That's the evil version, yeah.
Well, hang on. I actually broke them into three different categories.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Okay. I said that there are the characters who have gone too far. They cross boundaries of morality for an overarching desire for power or knowledge. Okay. And that's the predominant warning type of thing. These are the things that warn you what not to, you know, of the dangers of something.
Give us some samples of that, of each category.
Almost everything. You got Frankenstein. Island
okay,
of Dr.
so let's
Moreau.
Let's call that the Frankenstein.
The Frankenstein. You've got the comedy characters. You've got Emmett Brown in Back to the Future, or the Nutty Professor. Mm-hmm. Okay,
who are usually benevolent.
Benevolent, right? They're okay. not trying yeah. to do something of evil, but you know, but they're comedic. Okay.
Okay. So let's call those the Professor Browns.
Then you have the eccentric scientist Doc who has Brown. Somehow discovered a deeper understanding of the workings of the universe, but who seems crazy because of their understanding is too difficult for anyone else to comprehend.
Right.
Okay. This one's a little harder to.
I don't think.
Down.
No, I don't like think cookie characters.
But
no,
I would say like Doctor Who, someone like that.
I disagree. I don't disagree. I actually think that character is much more of the prophet. Character. I think that's a really, yeah, right. really
so, like,
old... That's Cassandra.
I mean, can't remember the name of the character, but the villain in Disney's The Black Hole might be a good example of that.
Right, yeah. right. Well, yeah. or more simply, just Dr. Zarkov from Flash Gordon. You know, there's a big meteor that's going to hit the Earth, and nobody believes me, and nobody listens to me. Mm-hmm. It's the Cassandra character. You know, I know what's going to happen. This is for the good of humanity.
But oftentimes, we have the mad scientist who basically is so smart... Okay, mm-hmm. that he has difficulty interacting with the real world in a way that, you know, that we can understand. So mm-hmm. we consider him to be kind of a mad scientist.
Okay,
you know?
I guess I concentrated on what to me was mad and crazy mm-hmm. was that they didn't understand. They're so smart, but they don't actually understand what they've gotten themselves into.
Right,
including even evil geniuses or benevolent, or yeah. the one that's worse is the guy who starts out to be good and his invention corrupts him,
right?
Which is very big in these stories.
Yeah, the ones who are playing God. I mean, I think universal megalomania is one of the things that's universal in the evil stories of
mad scientists. But it's interesting that sometimes, like the Invisible Man. Or even Doc Ock in the, I'm not sure the traditional story, but Doc Ock even
in
Spider-Man.
That's a great example.
They start out wanting to do good, but the technology gets away from them, and that's what changes them. Either
but
Doc
it's also,
Ock gets
But that brain
physically.
Set always turns into, they don't understand me. They don't understand. I'm still trying to change the world for good. You know, they don't understand what we're still trying to do. And so I have to, you know, because they don't understand me, I have to go beyond what is ethical to make them understand.
Well, with the exception yeah. of the Dr. Doom character in the first Fantastic Four movie, in general, the mad scientist is a well-designed character, mm-hmm. you know, with motivations that they try to achieve. That's the goal of everything.
Well, it's the goal of all good characters.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that's sort of the hallmark for the mad scientist character. You know, if they don't become iconic characters unless they have that overarching passion
right.
for something.
They have to have a real motivation or they don't make sense.
That's why I do think that Lex Luthor is a valid mad scientist because he's... His madness is he's a
though
psychopath.
We are also talking about the original Lex Luthor. The new Lex Luthor is a corporate head. He's yeah. not no longer right. a scientist.
The original Lex Luthor was a scientist. Yeah. He actually did design things. He,
yeah, you know, right. Robots and kryptonite devices yeah. and all that sort of fun stuff. Yeah,
sure,
the new
sure,
one
sure.
just pays other people to do it.
I can't remember. I saw this wonderful, wonderful cartoon of Lex Luthor where he was still a scientist but also the head of the corporation, and they had this one moment which I thought was just a great definition of his character where somebody comes up and he hands his assistant a pad and he basically says, here's the cure for leukemia, you know, and she goes, oh, what do you want me to do with it? He goes, well, it's a complete cure, so if you can send it to our scientists and figure out a way that we can make the dosage last forever so that people have to keep on taking it. And she said, oh, well, they're busy. They're working on the cancer cure you came up with. And he said, oh,
well, I guess it's going to have to wait then. And I was like, that's it. I mean, that's the consummate insane psychopathic mad genius.
Yeah. Well, okay, so can we talk about, I mean, there were mad scientists before the 40s. I mean, Frankenstein, that type of thing. But I think a defining moment was the 40s for mad scientists, and that's where we also got one of the characteristics that still pop up, which is the German accent.
Well, I think,
I think that was caused by Fritz Lang and Metropolis.
I think it got caused by a bunch of fucking Germans marching over Europe. Yeah,
I'm not really sure how a silent movie would influence the accents for mad scientists for years to come.
Well, no, Don might be making a very good point.
No. But right. I'm just saying. Okay. German crazy mad scientist.
Yeah.
Started to pop up and became a thing.
Let me just throw out. I think the mad scientist really becomes an institution after the rise of science in popular literature and the death of magic. You know, the mad scientist becomes the new form of magic. It's the new keeper of the unknown, the new guardian of the threshold beyond our understanding.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I think in the 1940s, when the real world focus onto science came about, and still the vast majority of the educational system did not have the grounding in science, principles of science that that followed in the 50s and 60s.
I think maybe... I think the understanding of science happened before that, but what I think was going on to me, what happened in the 40s, was that we are in a war... Science was now getting scary.
Yeah.
We were now in a war where things were, like, you know, bombs that
one bomb could destroy an entire city.
Exactly. Right.
But, I mean, if you look at the science, the way it's sort of treated in this literature, if you look at Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that's Robert Louis Stevenson. If you look at 20,000 Leagues Beyond Underneath the Sea or any of these things, that's H.G. Wells. I mean, this is all well before 1920, and that's when science could do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about Titanic, literally the ship going down, as being the death knell of human beings thinking that their science is infallible, that it can just cure anything. And for me, it just became less about the scientists as being alchemists, you know, as taking a potion or something like that to change themselves. And it became more how we could affect the world. You know, it became more nuclear science once it was 1940s.
That's an interesting point.
You know?
That's a very interesting point.
Because it was all alchemy before that. I mean, it was
I would count those as mad scientists.
Well, I'd like to point out...
I mean, Merlin is a mad scientist to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that is an excellent point right there, which is to say that we have always had a similar character to the mad scientist in magic as well, which is the magician that goes too far.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the mad magician.
Well, and a lot of our iconic mad scientist stories existed in a magical form before that.
Right.
Frankenstein is just really a retelling of the golem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
So, you know, we've brought this up when we were talking about robots with Joss. Here it pops up again.
I just like how you threw that out so cash.
Well, I'm just saying that we brought up the topic of, it seems like that we have been and still have this fascination or this fear of knowledge and technology. Because I think part of, and this is another interesting thing, that a lot of times the mad scientist goes corrupt when he gets power, and the knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and maybe this is an ancient old thing. We're worried about us learning so much that the technology is going to spin out of control. We're going to create a freaking robot that's going to take us down.
Well, that's where we've reached. We've reached from the beginning of the 20th century, where basically technology was infallible, to now where we will not give technology a chance. Well, it's going to go wrong.
Well, Frankenstein wasn't infallible.
Well, let's go back and look at the mind view that they had back in the day when they were writing some of these things. I mean, because first of all, we didn't have science the way we have it now. I mean, we were still just inventing things. They were in a world that was suddenly starting to change more and more rapidly.
Right.
Scientific change was taking off. I mean, even today, you know, we talk about how rapidly the amount of knowledge in the world doubles.
Right.
It's doubling so quickly today. We're used to so much change in our lives. These were people that were just at the beginning of some of this stuff. They were really just starting to see it affect their worlds. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cars were not that old then.
Also, I think the science was a little more understandable as well.
Science was a little more understandable.
If I swallow this, I feel this way. So what would happen if I swallowed something that was really advanced and it changed me?
I think
electricity can make dead things twitch. What happens if we put an awful lot of it into a dead thing?
Right, exactly.
But vivisection, cutting into things, surgery, some of this stuff was really pretty new in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they didn't do that. So when you look at what they were talking about, when they were talking about something like Island of Dr. Moreau, where they were talking about Frankenstein and cutting things apart and putting them together, that was a really foreign concept.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas today, you know, people cut an arm off and it gets put back on. I mean, you know, some of these things are much more normal to us today. And
I have a dead guy's thing in my knee.
Probably less horrific.
But why is it that when we find out something new, society goes down the dark path and we fear? What is it that, why are we constantly in fear of what we've just learned?
So are hackers the new mad scientists now then?
I mean, but it happens. I mean, why is it every time we, you know, atomic bombs, we've got, you know, creatures that are atomic creatures. We've got Frankensteins every time when we have surgery.
The super collider. People are afraid that the super collider could end the universe.
Right.
Yeah. Now, but there's two sides to it. I mean, it's a good point that you're making, you know, and we've talked about it before that there are neophiles and neophobes. There are people that like new things. There are people that don't like change. But even people who like change, there's certainly that element of fear about something different and new coming around the corner that's, you know, that is dangerous. Sometimes something new is dangerous. There's a reason that we don't walk through the woods just
we also have
all
an innate berries, understanding berries. Of what we understand won't mm-hmm. usually kill us. Right.
Right.
The unknown is that, you know, it by definition, the unknown is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't been there. Something
but right
there
now,
may
it's
hurt
almost
me.
Like the known is dangerous. Inventing, exploring. Now, I'm going to do a big stretch here, and you guys can tell me if I'm just being a complete douche. Do you think that the biting of the apple of knowledge is part of the same fear? That story.
Yeah. I definitely
do. Do you think Eve is a mad scientist?
Well, it's a good point because actually there is a theme, especially in some of the older stuff, the Frankenstein stuff, there's a theme that basically says when you try to play God, you're going to be punished for it because you are not God and you cannot create life.
But isn't it interesting that playing God just means the science?
Well, it's our current way of meaning
maybe.
The science.
Like a lot of times, it means creating life.
We're trying to do that all the time. He is trying to be. He's a scientist who is trying to study why we die, why there is death.
Mm-hmm.
There's people doing that now, and they've been doing that from the day one. The only difference is that someone wrote a story about it, and he did it, and that author decided. You know what?
What do you mean, Mary Shelley and Frankenstein?
Yeah, that author decided. That path leads to a monster.
Well, she was really exploring megalomania, you know, and really, really the ability to, I mean, because the horror is not the monster in Frankenstein. The horror is the mad scientist, is this person who realized that his child has gotten out of control.
But part of the horror is that he shouldn't have been doing it.
But I mean,
he's a megalomania for even trying to do it.
But Frankenstein's monster is not a failure. Frankenstein's monster is not a monster. It's intelligent. It's looking for life. It's looking for a mate. You know, it's basically, it ends up, the scientist is chasing this monster to the ends of the earth in order to chase it down and kill it because he thinks
he's
done wrong.
But you don't think that book is written as a horror book?
No, I think it definitely is, but I think it's more of a cautionary tale against playing God.
Which is simply being a scientist and learning.
Well, I don't think that that's the case because I don't think that she was making a case against all science. I think she was making a case against this specific
turning up the volume of science, to the point where everyone's trying to achieve.
I don't think she's making an argument against the destination. I think the basic thrust of Frankenstein is an argument against the speed at which we are approaching the destination, which I've actually heard retold in a lot of different ways. It's rarely the end result that is considered dangerous. It's the last lack of understanding of where you are when you get there now, because we're in such a hurry to get there, we don't bother to understand the process.
I mean, you look at what...
And I think that's what Frankenstein's about.
What's his name? Jeff Goldblum's speech in Jurassic Park, where he basically says, you guys are spending so much time figuring out whether or not you can do this, you don't figure out whether or not you should. Mm-hmm. And I think that is absolutely the main thing for what mad scientists are.
Okay, you know? So let me... Okay, what about... I can't remember the names. BioShock, the video game. Have we all played it?
BioShock, I thought, is a fantastic mad scientist.
So here's an interesting thing. That city was created for a haven for scientists to pursue their need to move forward without
ethical considerations.
In other words, if knowledge is just the obtaining of stuff around you, how is that evil or bad or in any way immoral?
Knowledge is not bad. Knowledge is a tool of every sort, something that can build or destroy. It depends who wields it.
Actions are bad. And the argument, at least in Frankenstein, is not that knowing something is bad. It's the action of creating this monster is bad. The argument in Island of Dr. Moreau is not that the knowledge is bad, but how it was used was bad.
Well, that's the
selfishness of the action.
That's the other interesting thing that I think a lot of these stories have, which is... Once they get this knowledge, it changes the scientist.
Right.
And that, to me, is another important comment that the writer is saying, is that this knowledge is power, and that person, or maybe society, if that's what they're coming on, can't handle that.
Well, they had a real... You know, if you look at it in terms of the scientist's desire to do good... And the natural resultant effect of evil coming out of it, you can look at it's Forbidden Planet. Professor Morbius in Forbidden Planet.
Oh, right.
I mean, very specifically uses an alien brain boosting machine to help out. But he's got this, he's got this monster from his id that ends up doing evil. I mean, that is the very direct imputation on, all right, here's the good that I'm trying to do, and here's the evil that actually comes out of it.
Just another concept that I think fits into something Aaron was talking about that I've always found interesting is the concept of that fits into the mad scientist scheme of where just the knowledge itself is damning. Examples of this, Event Horizon. Right? Does anyone remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
They invent the hyperdrive, right? And the first time they launch the hyperdrive, the ship comes back and everyone on it has been changed.
Right.
And it's not that they've done anything. It's not, it's just that a knowledge threshold has been crossed that you can no longer contain was not
totally,
meant for you.
Totally reminded me of a big theme in H.P. Lovecraft, which is...
H.P. Lovecraft.
He always talks about... knowing the things that man was never meant to know.
Right.
And like the mad Arab goes into this, unlocks this portal in the Necronomicon, goes into this portal and learns, sees things that man was not meant to know, and he comes out the mad Arab. He's freaking deranged. Just the possession of that, whatever it is. And I love that theme because it's scary.
It's terrifying to me.
It's terrifying because I think it's connecting to that, oh my God, is there something I shouldn't know that is, A, makes me so insignificant. Knowing it makes me feel so insignificant in this universe that it would make me go mad.
And there are lots of other examples of that in many different stories. Some stories say that if you learn the name of God, it will unmake you.
Right.
Or it could unmake the universe.
I wish we could...
Where knowledge in its very essence. And so I think when we stepped away from the concept of magic being behind all these stories and stepped into the world of science, first a certain new groundwork had to be laid, which was done by the classic mad scientists who were making a tangible invention of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was a transformative potion
right.
or a time machine, these objects that changed the world. And then we started stepping in a different direction. One other thing I wanted to bring up real quick also is that I think in the 1940s and 50s and even the 60s, you saw a mad scientist that was personally responsible for what they did It was, you know, it came from this person, their actions. And now in mainstream entertainment, what I think we're seeing is a shift away from the one person who did these things to the government taking this and abusing it. You know, the outside force taking from the individual and misapplying. You know,
so the mad bureaucracy.
Yeah, like I just watched that Day of the Dead movie, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of bad zombie movies, it's rarely one person who comes up with this virus that does wrong. Right. It's the government deciding, oh, we could use this as a weapon,
or look at us thinking about our dancing crazy robot, which now sucks blood.
Exactly.
You know,
or look at 28 Days Later, which was a great example where in the beginning, it's these people who are studying something that's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. They're trying to do it in a responsible way because they've recognized something that's out there in the wild and they want to find a way to cure it. And people come out and let the genie out of the bottle.
So you're moving away from the mad scientist and moving into the mad science, which is the Cyberdyne's,
which is existing independently of a creator now. You know, it's like science is taking on its own force.
But isn't that what Cyberdyne and Battlestar Galactica actually are? Aren't they just simple, you know? But that's basically, like, are they expansions of the Frankenstein myth?
Yeah,
but it's, again, the science, and there's not a scientist specifically.
Yeah, the science has now taken on a life of its own. In Battlestar Galactica, the skin jobs are not made by humans.
Right.
You know, the skin jobs are made by the science, mm-hmm. and then they drive the
science.
What
about Tyra? Maybe we should go through some of these
fantastic mad scientists.
So, yeah, and we can make comments. If anybody is upset that we don't mention one of them, there are thousands.
How could you guys not mention?
Yeah, so we're just going to skip through, you know, some of them. Of course, Frankenstein.
Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
Dr. Jekyll. Why is it doctors are bad and professors are good?
Man.
I was looking down the list.
That's interesting.
And it was always
that way.
Like, well, doctors were almost always bad. If you were a doctor, you were going to commit evil most of the time. I'll say 80. And then you were a professor.
It's doctor is a harder word linguistically. Yeah. Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, professor. Professor.
Is it Dr. Griffin from The Invisible Man? He's the guy who. Yes. Actually went bad because of being invisible.
Yes, but his punishment was, you know, being invisible as well. I love The Invisible Man because it's such... Because the science was treated correctly, you know? So, he's got to wear these dark glasses because his eyes are being burned by the sun because he hasn't slept in months and... You know, it's brilliant.
All right, since I guess I'll put some of these guys back into the mad scientist list since you guys expanded it. Then there's a gazillion James Bond.
Yeah,
Doctor No.
What I wondered. Goldfinger. Would Blofeld count?
He was a corporate head, wasn't he?
I didn't know. I didn't know whether or not he was
like
a head
of just.
But he was always inventing weird mechanical inventions.
No, he had them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tesla in The Prestige, you know, what is it? What was the name of the scientist in Altered States? I could not remember the name of the scientist.
Oh, you mean John Hurt?
Yeah. I couldn't remember his name, what the character's name was.
Yeah. Dr. Strangelove from... he's
course.
The German...
that invents the machine.
The fly.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fantastic. These are
actually... Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is great because it's a spoof on all mad scientists.
Just to sort of... one of my favorite cases of a mad scientist and sort of maybe a simplified version of the morality of it is if you look at Dr. Bunsen Honeydew on The Muppets.
Yeah.
You know, here you have... Basically, if Dr. Bunsen Honeydew... I mean, if he's doing whatever his action is, if he's creating, you know, a chocolate mousse or whatever it happens to be... Mm-hmm. If it has a benign effect, I was always fine with it. But if it hurt Beaker,
which it always did,
which it hurt most of the occasions, it always bugged me out. That's when I was like, hey, don't hurt Beaker.
You know, I think that was the response you were supposed to have.
One of the things that have come out, let me say this again. One of the things that I really love is the comic book Girl Genius. And I love its take on mad scientists because it's basically, what if you lived in a world where everyone was a mad scientist?
Right.
Maybe not everyone, but like there were lots of them all over the place and they ruled the world. you know? And I love kind of that perspective on it, where it's come at with from a slightly comedic perspective. Mm-hmm. And sort of rewrites the rules and the conventions of the genre. It's pretty amazing.
The mad scientists in comic books are great. You have Dr. Doom. You have Mr. Sinister.
They're a staple. They're a staple.
Dr. Clayton Forrester from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Yay! Of course.
I love that.
Well, why is it that the scientists that actually do create things in our world, like the scientist who created the atomic bomb, which is arguably, you know, the most destructive force ever been unleashed on our planet,
also creative,
were not mad scientists. They were scientists. They were rational people.
Well, I mean, okay, how many mad scientists really exist?
Well, my point is, why are the scientists that we always see
Tesla
in film mad scientists? Why do we instill that character?
Because
on
they're
them?
Caricatures of, you know, I think they're, you know,
are they? I mean, if you look at the scientists, I mean, in Nazi Germany's who were, you know, doing all the
Dr. freaking Mengele.
Dr. Mengele, the people who were doing the experiments on what is the term I'm looking for?
Now, would you just say immoral makes them mad scientists straight out?
It's the eugenics experiments in Nazi Germany. That's what I was looking for, you know? Very specifically trying to breed these children who were perfect. You know, not utilizing Jewish children, but utilizing German children to create the perfect Aryan race.
Yeah.
You know? It's funny. You know, I listen to that and I'm like, well, that's kind of creepy, but I don't find it as horrible as like the medical research they did. We're like, how long does it take for a guy to freeze to death? Let's drop him in this tank.
Or
will they survive longer if they're two? Oh, look, they make love. They live another 15 seconds longer while they're in the freezing water.
Yeah, it's...
That, to me, is more horrible than the eugenics.
And that makes them... Does that put them in the mad scientist category?
Yeah, pretty solidly for me.
Or the fact that they were experimenting on twins because they wanted to have perfect control groups. They would do an experiment on one person and let the other person live for the control group.
But I mean, for me, it's all mad science. I mean, just the PETA calling for the $1 million award to anybody who can create the living beef cube. I mean, that seems a little freaky to me. I'm not so for the living beef
cube. The living beef cube has feelings too.
That's why I limited my version of mad scientists to the kind of technology escapes them.
I think part of the problem is that, you know, you can't tell what direction something's going to be done. It's like any good experiment. You won't know the results until the experiment's happened.
Isn't there a Gene Hackman movie where he plays a mad doctor who cures cancer, or who comes up with a cure for cancer, but he turns out
he's the guy from... he's down the sewers.
The basement of the place.
What is he actually working on?
X-Files guy.
He's trying to cure cancer, but they find out that he's actually working on live human beings, and he's, you know, that's why these girls are disappearing.
David Duchovny has to go down there and help.
I cannot remember the name.
Totally forgettable movie. That's why. Well, what we're saying is you can't really define a mad scientist, but you know one when you see one.
No, I
they're kind of like porn.
I actually think that there's different categories of madness.
Okay.
So the first category of madness is you know, sort of the guy that's kind of unfocused.
Who's the worst?
Yeah. Mwah-ha-ha-ha. There's that one.
Maniacal laugh.
Crazy hair.
Well, wouldn't you say that the benign scientist comes before that? The ones who's like, who you know, Doc Brown or Flubber, the guy who creates Flubber.
Well, there are people who have madness because their madness is how they interact with the world. Like Doc Brown is unfocused. He's so brilliant. He's Einstein, basically. So there's the Einstein.
The hermit.
Too. You know, the hermit, right. And then so you've got the madness in terms of how they interact with the world. But then you have the other form of madness, which is the madness of desire, of wanting something, either power or knowledge, so much that ambition is what makes you mad.
They laughed at me at the university.
Or how about the madness then that Don's talking about, which is they're so morally corrupt that they are willing to do horrible things to go to do their experiment.
I think it's the same thing.
Megalomania.
I think you and I are making the same point.
I think that's the next level up.
Which is that they want they want something so badly that they'll do anything to get it. You know, the madness of desire.
Got it.
You know,
I just think the first scientist who invented fire and was able to cook a meal for his tribe was probably hailed as being a beneficent, wonderful person.
How do we know it's a
and
he?
And the first scientists that invented fire and burned down the entire forest they all depended on for their livelihood was the first mad scientist.
That was the other thing I looked at. Why are these all guys? I could find very few, if not any.
Because science has for two reasons probably. Okay. Because
chicks aren't smart, man.
Well, that's the
you're going to pay for that.
Well, there goes our
thanks for listening. The audience. Gone. All right. No, but because for years, we kept women out of science for a long time. It's
you need a certain educational basis and formal training to be a real scientist.
But over the last half of these books that we consider the core of stuff.
Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. Why is she writing it? That way.
Well, but the point is, again, half these books were written in a time when 98% of the scientists were men. What's interesting is how many women scientists during that time were the ones that actually discovered things.
Right.
So, those of you readers out there, please go to our forums at www.geekson.com, and there'll be a episode 95 forum header there. And if you know of any female mad scientists that we
couldn't think of one. Other than I came up with Cassandra because the mad girl scientist genius. Is kind of like
Isn't
the prophet
she a mad
that knows.
Scientist?
Well, but she's but not really mad. She's just a genius scientist.
She's a girl genius. It's in the title. Mm-hmm.
I know, but I thought she could be.
Which, by the way,
it's not girl scientist.
That comic has been getting really good recently. So
did Frau Blücher do anything?
Other than scare horses? Yeah.
No, she was not a scientist.
There are the closest example I can think of to this, which is the fantasy side of it, which is the real life woman. And again, we're looking at fantasy, so it's the vampire mythology. And it's the woman that would murder virgins and
Elizabeth Bathory?
And use the blood to try and stay young. So again, we're looking at the fantasy side.
Yeah, she bathed in it, right?
She bathed in their blood to try and stay young.
The only fictional one that comes to mind, I don't even remember her name. A couple versions of Ming the Merciless's chief of science was female.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, we should wrap this up. Let our listeners correct us on that point. But also, email us at geeks@geekson.com, and you can also email us individually with our names at geekson.com. So, but our
Matt,
forums,
Peter, Don, Aaron @geekson.com.
Our forums are really, really busy. They're always talking about something crazy. They're arguing. They're getting into it. We've got a lot of really smart people there who correct us. So go there, set us straight.
Let correct your voice be heard mercilessly.
Yeah. Anyway, we have anything else before we wrap this yacht up?
I think that's it.
Another episode of Geeks On, down the drain.
Excellent.
Another hour and a half of your life, wasted.
Gone.
Gone.
And we're coming up on 100 here soon. Oh, my God.
If any of you have any ideas for what to do for our big 100th episode blowout, be sure to write us or post us on our forums. We're still trying to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm. Also, those of you who are going to Comic-Con, make sure you get a Twitter account and get signed up so we can all trade Twitter. We can subscribe to each other's Twitter accounts so that while we're at Comic-Con, you can just tweet what booth you're at so that everyone knows where everyone is. You don't have to call each other. It's great. It's really easy.
Catch up, Don. It's
science. I refuse to use the word twit as a verb.
Twitter. Why don't you go Twitter something? Anyway, it's real fun.
How dare you, sir?
My name is Aaron, H-A-A-R-0-N-H, so you can go and follow my Twitter there. I'm twitting all the time. So.
Yes, he is.
Bye, everybody.
Mercilessly.
Have a good geek week.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.